Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, to Washington now, where the US Capitol is waking up to another dramatic day in Donald Trump's second term. US tariffs on China are taking effect, but the threatened tariffs on Canada and Mexico have been delayed following last-minute deals on drug trafficking measures and border security. There's also a power struggle over the fate of US overseas aid. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, claiming he's taking command, but Elon Musk insists we're shutting it down and feeding US aid into the wood chipper. Let's get the latest. We're joined from Washington by Chief Correspondent of Feature Story News, Simon Marks, and we'll come to USAID in a moment. But on tariffs first, Simon, what exactly have Canada and Mexico agreed to now to stave off the tariffs?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Claire, because it is not evident that Canada and Mexico committed to anything particularly new in order to persuade Donald Trump to step back from the brink. In the case of the Canadians at the last minute, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, soon, of course, to be leaving office, agreed to reinforce the Canadian border with the United States in a fresh effort to clamp down on migration flows into the United States from Canada, and also the flow of the synthetic opioid fentanyl. But Canada had largely agreed to do all of that when it was talking to Joe Biden back in December of last year. Earlier in the day, the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, told Donald Trump that she would reinforce the border between Mexico and the United States with troops. She appeared to be suggesting that she might send another 5,000 troops beyond the 10,000 that had previously been committed to that task. She also told him that she was engaged in a public service advertising campaign across Mexico about the dangers of fentanyl. That seemed to spark Donald Trump's interest, and he asked to see the advertisements that are being run in Mexico. She promised to send them to him. That all appears to have been enough to persuade Donald Trump that he needed to step back from the brink and at least delay for another month the imposition of the 25% tariffs that he's been threatening to place on imports from Canada and Mexico. But this, of course, is the second time that Donald Trump has kind of blinked, because remember, he was threatening all sorts of dire consequences for Colombia 10 days ago when they refused to accept migration flights from the United States, only for that to be resolved at the last minute. On all three occasions, the White House has insisted that this is a big victory for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. It's not immediately evident that the facts bear that out.
And there were some reports that people from within his own party, the Republicans, reacted with horror when they heard this, because in particular you had politicians who represent agricultural states saying, hang on a second, our farmers need to get their feed from Mexico and you're going to slap a tariff on it. Did you hear much about that, about the pushback from within?
Yeah, absolutely. But it was a quiet pushback from within. And some Republicans simply scrambled to strike their own deals. So Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, a senior figure within the party from Iowa, celebrated the fact in social media posts directed at constituents in Iowa that he had been able to secure a carve out for potash from the sanctions that were about to be imposed, because Iowa is a big generator of it. But there's no question that Republicans more broadly, like the White House, also had their eyes on the markets yesterday. At opening bell, the Dow Jones Industrial Average suffered a pretty substantial reverse. The Wall Street Journal had declared this the dumbest trade war in history. And its owner, Rupert Murdoch, was a visitor to the White House yesterday for the event when Donald Trump in the Oval Office was able to announce that he'd already secured the Mexican agreement that would allow him to step back from the brink, and that he would soon be talking once again to Justin Trudeau, a conversation that ultimately brought that tariff threat to be at least temporarily withdrawn.
As you say, though, I mean, he has blinked now twice. We know that the threat of tariffs, it's still there. We're expecting something to happen in 30 days. But the EU will be looking at this going, well, what can we give him to push him back? I mean, that is a very reasonable question to ask in light of what's happened with Canada and Mexico.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, Donald Trump over the last 4 or 5 days has spoken in very dramatic terms about the need for him to impose substantial tariffs on the European Union. He described EU trading practices on Sunday night here in Washington as an atrocity and indicated that very severe tariffs will soon be imposed on the European Union. What we have definitely seen in the, about 14 days since Donald Trump's inauguration, it's now only 2 weeks since he was sworn in, are a series of events that once again indicate that Donald Trump is an entirely transactional president. He makes all sorts of very bellicose threats, often towards allies and partners, never mind the Chinese, and then in last-minute fevered negotiations to avert negative consequences of a trade war that he denies actually exists, he finds a way of securing some sort of an agreement and then claims victory. Mm-hmm. European Union bureaucrats would be forgiven for presuming that he might do exactly the same sort of thing with them, although the vehemence of his argument about the need to get this atrocity by the European Union fixed is definitely much stronger than the arguments that he's advanced over Canada and Mexico.
Now, Simon, let's talk about what's happening with US aid. I mean, people may have seen those pictures of staff standing outside the headquarters of USAID in Washington, and the doors were locked and they couldn't get into work. They couldn't access their email. So what's happening?
Well, we're waiting to see what happens today. But I mean, Elon Musk, as you know, made a Friday night visit. Members of his team from the Department of Government Efficiency, which, of course, is not really an actual government department. And they basically took the place over. They forced their way into the building. Initially, building security refused to give them access. They threatened to call the U.S. Marshals to force the issue. They took control of USAID's entire computer systems, shut down its website, terminated its social media accounts, were able to access parts of that computer system that included classified information in the teeth of opposition from two senior figures within USAID, who were then placed on administrative leave. And as you said, Elon Musk boasted over the weekend of feeding USAID to the wood chipper. He indicated that it had been an honor to kill the agency off, which he described as a criminal enterprise. He provided no evidence to support that claim. Donald Trump also indicated he wanted USAID to be eliminated. Yesterday, they named Secretary of State Marco Rubio the acting administrator of the agency. He is evaluating all its policies and programs to see if they align with Donald Trump's national security priorities. But what happens between now and that evaluation being completed to all of those thousands of USAID-sponsored programs all over the world that provide absolutely vital humanitarian and developmental assistance is extremely unclear, and I think very few people here understand how Elon Musk has the power to walk into USAID, a government agency, and basically shutter it, which is where we found ourselves yesterday.
So is there a power struggle then between Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and Elon Musk? Do they both want to do the same thing, but they both want to own it, or is there more to it than that?
I think there's not really a power struggle. I mean, Marco Rubio, having been handed this kind of smoldering disaster by Donald Trump yesterday to resolve, indicated that he believed USAID did some good work in various parts of the world and he wanted some of that work to continue. But he stood by the evaluation process and also said that USAID had only itself to blame for the predicament in which it finds itself, because he said its staff had been completely uncooperative with incoming Trump administration officials. I mean, the bottom line is that the president, on Inauguration Day 15 days ago, signed an executive order declaring that the goals and aims of humanitarian assistance as espoused by USAID were antithetical to American values. If Marco Rubio's going to advance the argument that USAID needs to be completely restored and brought back online, he will be running headlong into turbulence from that executive order. And it's far from evident that that's what Mr. Rubio is going to do.
Simon Marks, thanks as always. Simon is chief correspondent of Feature Story News.